You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Rommel. I think there's no other way to start today's show than by talking about the passing of Kobe Bryant, age 41, on January 26, 2020, along with his daughter, Gianna Maria, age 13, and seven other passengers aboard a helicopter in California. It's a difficult thing to talk about the death of anyone, and it's not like we all knew Kobe personally. I actually never had the opportunity to speak to him, even in the locker room. When I had the opportunity to do so, I actually wound up not covering the Lakers game, and it was during Kobe's last season. So I've never actually gotten a chance to speak with Kobe, and never will. And obviously, it's a very bizarre moment for anybody with any kind of attachment to the NBA. As I said, without having any kind of personal relationship with him, it's tough not to see the kind of impact he had on and off the court, and to see how it affects everybody in this NBA community. It's perhaps a little bit cliche, but players often refer to the NBA family as a brotherhood. Of the 450 players that are active players in the NBA during any one season, no matter when you played, whether it was in the 1950s or this year, or even for one season or for 20 seasons, you're part of a very limited fraternity, and they take that very seriously. They pass that information along generationally. They talk about what it's like to be in the NBA, the experiences that only NBA players understand. And so when they lose a member of that fraternity, and not just any member, because Kobe Bryant is perhaps one of the greatest basketball players in NBA history. He is, I think, probably a top 10, maybe a top 15 player, depending on where you argue it. But all of that seems kind of empty today, because it's not about his statistical output or his career or anything of that sort. And there's so much being said about Kobe, and I don't know that I'm actually offering anything of value to it. I'll be 100% honest with you. I could say that I am, but it's, death is a very personal thing, in my opinion. And when you look at the death of a celebrity or somebody that was as immensely popular as Kobe was, there's always going to be some kind of misinformation or people trying to take advantage of the situation to make a joke, or even to use his death as an opportunity to espouse some kind of greater moral high horse. I can't say that Kobe was without controversy over the course of his career. He was involved in a terrible situation in Eagle, Colorado. I kind of had to refresh my memory a little bit, because when the news broke, it was difficult to kind of have any kind of sense of pity for Kobe, what he was going through and everything else like that. And there are very many details that are still, even years later, kind of obscured about what happened. But it does kind of shroud and cover everything up regarding his career, and trying to appreciate the person that he is and was. But I can say that I always kind of wanted to like Kobe Bryant before the Eagle Colorado situation, and maybe even afterwards, because he always came across as being somebody who understood what life outside of basketball meant. For as much as we associate him with this ruthless competitiveness, and there was no doubt he was that, he was also very gifted as far as his understanding of people and languages, the fact that he spoke Italian and Spanish and even Slovenian, from what we understand from Luka Doncic, that he speaks and has wanted to learn all these things, that he wanted to expand in a kind of maniacal, obsessive way what it was like to learn things outside of basketball, that he was so aggressive in his pursuit of excellence in whatever field it was. And certainly we got a chance to appreciate it because of his basketball skills. But there was more to him than that. And not only that, but he was a member of a family. And he was a man who had a wife and four children, one of which is no longer here today. And I think that's the hardest part than anything. Like, Kobe's death is certainly a difficult one to discuss, but the loss of a teenager in the prime of her life with so much to look forward to and hope and dream about, and she'll never have those opportunities, and that's truly, truly tragic. And it's, you know, it's terrible that we could only discuss her life because we don't really know much of it other than through the context of her father, but she was a human being, she was a person, and she's gone now, and that's a terrible, terrible thing. But so Kobe's death has impacted the NBA community. Players today were kind of just, I had just left the Heat practice when I got a text from my wife saying that Kobe Bryant had passed away, and I was in shock because I couldn't believe it. I thought in today's world, it's not so hard to imagine that it's a misreport of some kind, or somebody might have some kind of information incorrect. He's 41. How could he possibly die? He was seemingly invincible. And yet it was. And then we start to see reports that maybe all of his children had passed away, and that perhaps fellow NBA player Rick Fox had passed away as well. And so slowly but surely we get to find out more information about it. But it just happens so quickly, as so many things do in today's world. And it's hard to process hours later as I'm recording this. And I don't know what to say, but I feel like it's important to talk about it because Kobe contextualized so much of the NBA over the last 20 years. Whether you appreciated him on the court or not, off the court or not, he was a presence. He tied together the generation of Michael Jordan through Allen Iverson, through Shaquille O'Neal, through LeBron James and beyond. Like, the players in today's world, in today's league, grew up watching Kobe take on LeBron. And as much as Michael Jordan for older fans might represent what NBA greatness was, I think a lot of people still see Kobe in that light now. And so he had some incredible performances against Miami. But even, again, I'm talking about these things because I feel like I have to. But it's a greater thing here that a human being and eight other human beings, including his daughter, are gone. And that's a terrible loss. And so, as I mentioned via Twitter, just take advantage of the opportunity to tell those that you're close to that you love them, because you never know. A helicopter accident might not be something that you're likely to be involved in, but it could be a car accident, it could be anything. And so hopefully you'll make the most of this opportunity, that you'll make the most of every opportunity to be happy, to spread love, and to be part of something bigger and greater than you. Because I think that's what we all should do whenever we have that opportunity. You're listening to Locked On Heat. So there wasn't a recap on Friday, moving on. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened against the Los Angeles Clippers. I'm sorry, the LA Clippers on Friday night when they came to Miami to play a game against the Heat. And it was an incredible affair. It was actually a pretty star-studded event, broadcast nationally on ESPN. We found out before the game, as we were sitting there during Eric Spoelstra's pregame press conference, and he informed us that Goran Dragic and Kendrick Nunn would be out of the lineup for various maladies. Jimmy Butler, who had been out the previous game, was going to be available against the Clippers, obviously. Tyler Hero was going to be available, and so we started to hear that maybe there might be opportunities for other players, namely one Dion Waiters. In the locker room before the game, he actually dressed in a way that we had not seen prior during the course of the season. He's been in and out of the lineup, in and out of the locker room, but very, very briefly, mostly because he's either been suspended or he's been ill. But there he was getting ready before the game. And sure enough, at some point during the second quarter, Eric Spoelstra put in Dion Waiters for the first time, and it was incredible applause from the American Airlines Arena crowd. I was very impressed by that, to be honest with you, because if Twitter, we get so caught up in Twitter. Look, you are all listening to this podcast, and I appreciate it immensely, but Twitter, the voice for the people who listen to this podcast, the loudest voice for the people who listen to this podcast, is very one-dimensional, not necessarily reflective of what people at the American Airlines Arena think and believe. They might be more casual fans, and I'll grant you that. But for whatever reason, they seem to appreciate Dion Waiters. Maybe they understood that he was suspended. Maybe they knew that he had some kind of off-the-court issues. Maybe they thought he was just, as many of you do, believe he was just a selfish malcontent. But either way, when he stepped onto the floor on Friday night, there were loud cheers of support. And it was great to see, I believe. And from that point forward, Dion played a pretty good game. I think overall he had some moments that indicate clearly a great amount of rust. He had some defensive missteps. He had some ball handling issues. He also was kind of aggressive with his shot selection. And as you can expect, the guy hadn't had an opportunity to score in an NBA game since October. He was going to take a damn advantage of it, and he certainly did. In his 18 minutes of play, he scored 14 points on 5 of 12 shooting. But that doesn't tell the whole story. Miami had a pretty convincing lead for most of the second quarter, and then that kind of slipped away towards the end of that. In the third quarter, the Clippers just seemed to get really unstoppable from three-point line. They just were missing shots. Either Landry Shamet or Patrick Patterson, who started the third quarter because he hadn't started the first quarter. Doc Rivers inserted Patterson into the game, and he wound up making a pretty significant impact. He finished with 12 points on 4 of 5 shooting from the field, 2 of 3 from three-point range. And obviously, Leonard was going to have some shots. Maurice Harkless had some big shots as well. And Landry Shamet, again, finished with 22 points. They cut that lead pretty convincingly and soon had a lead of their own. And then things were compounded even worse when Jimmy Butler fell down in a heap and twisted his ankle. Sprained it, as we came to find out later on. He was immediately taken out of the game. He did not return. That was after having received a flagrant foul earlier in the day from Montrezl Harrell, who swatted Jimmy across the face, across the eyes in particular, and so Jimmy was crumpled on the floor for that as well. He eventually wound up playing again, but after the ankle injury, he did not come back into the lineup, and so it was time for somebody to step up, and there was a number of people who did. Bam Adebayo scored 18 points. Myers Leonard had 7. Duncan Robinson had 16. Tyler Hero had 19 on 8 of 19 shooting. He was a little off from three-point range. He seemed like he was a little bit taking it a little bit too personally. Something I've seen from him in the past, that he seems like he takes these battles very, very personally. Like he wants to prove to himself that he can, or he wants to show up whoever's guarding him and things of that sort. But I think a big story that went unnoticed was that Kelly Olynyk had a huge game, 19 points on 6 of 11 shooting. But Dion Waiters, I think, was the story of the game. And I know maybe a lot of you might be rolling your eyes thinking this is my own personal feelings about Dion or things of that sort. But at the end of the game, the Clippers had a pretty convincing lead, and then they slowly chipped away. And a lot of that happened because of Dion and his incredible performance. Now, there were other performances, other guys that stepped up as well. But there was one particularly riveting play with 34 seconds left where Lou Williams had the ball in his hands. Dion was guarding him. He rose up for the shot. Dion blocked it. Williams collected the rebound, I guess. And then he wound up dribbling back to the three-point line. Tried to pull up again as the shot clock was expiring. Dion was all over him and blocked his shot again. Then Bam Adebayo collected the rebound, broke the ball up court. Wound up finding Dion. Didn't even have his feet set. And he wound up shooting a three-pointer to cut the lead to 3. And for a second there, again with 34 seconds left, you got the feeling that Miami might be able to come back and that Dion would have the perfect end to a hell of a redemption story. Unfortunately, it didn't work out that way. Kawhi Leonard was just too good, to be honest with you. With Dion guarding him, with Derrick Jones Jr. guarding him, with anybody guarding him, he seemed like he took his game to another level. Like, there were some questionable foul calls that sent Kawhi to the line where he finished 11 of 11 from the free throw stripe. But either way, when he had to take those shots, whether they were 18-footers, fadeaways, you know, whatever shot he was willing to take, 4 of 9 from the three-point range, which is pretty impressive. And then wound up collecting his first career triple-double, 10 rebounds, 10 assists, and 33 points. Clippers wind up winning 122-117 over the Heat. It didn't feel like a bad loss. I feel like with Jimmy getting hurt, with two key offensive players in Kendrick and Goran being out of the game, with Justice Winslow being out, no one's going to cry for you, as Eric Spoelstra mentioned. No one's going to feel sorry for a team that winds up losing key players. But that doesn't change the reality that they were without those players. And Miami responded pretty well. They had some big moments there. And maybe the focus probably should be that they shouldn't have allowed the lead to slip in the first place. But, you know, you have to give the Clippers credit. They are a very good team. They are a title contending team, a legitimate one. But I think it also showed positively that Miami can contend with these teams, whether it's the Lakers, where they had a close game in December, or the Clippers. Now, both of those games were at home. And they both represent the last two, the only two losses at the American Airlines Arena for the Heat. But they also showed that Miami is capable of holding their own against these title contending teams. That in a seven-game series, you like Miami's chances at least of making them competitive. They're not going to be a pushover. They are deep enough, they are talented enough, they are good enough to contend with anybody. And when they're engaged defensively, they can do a very good job. Those moments have been somewhat fleeting of late, but still enough to kind of look at it as a positive. And I think it was overall a pretty solid game for Miami. And again, it was against a very good team. A win would have been great. I think a win would have been a perfect arc for not just Dion, but for the Heat and for the way they were able to come back from adversity and everything else. But sometimes you just don't get those breaks, and you have to give credit to Kawhi Leonard, who is an MVP candidate, whether or not he plays or doesn't play as much as we'd like him to. The reality is that he's a hell of a player, one of the top five players in the league. He certainly showed it against the Heat. But Miami doesn't have much of an opportunity to kind of sit back and enjoy what was a competitive game. There are no moral victories in the NBA. They had practice on Sunday after taking Saturday off. I'll have some audio from that practice session later on, but I think everybody was kind of looking forward to a very challenging week ahead, because it's a back-to-back game against the Magic at home on Monday, and then the Celtics come to Miami the next day for another game. So it's a back-to-back set there, Monday and Tuesday at home. Then the Heat have a couple days off before traveling to Orlando again. Then they come back the following Monday to host the 76ers before traveling for the first game of a six-game road trip, where they go on to face those same LA Clippers in Los Angeles this time. So again, a very big week. Four games over the next week versus the Magic, Celtics, Magic again, and then 76ers before embarking on a six-game road trip. So the start of a lot of things there, and I think a turning point in the season. And I believe Jimmy Butler actually mentioned this during his media session earlier today, where he believes that this is a key turning point for the Heat, for them to kind of realize that if they want to be legitimate contenders, if they want to be a legitimate playoff team, this is an opportunity to go and show it. This is not, you're going to be on the road. You can't just rely on an incredible home record and expect the best. This is an opportunity for you to go on the road against good teams and prove your worth and prove your mettle. Coming up, I'll play an interview from Dion Waiters talking about what to expect from him going forward, what it was like for him to get the FaceTime call from Eric Spoelstra on Friday, letting him know that he was going to play, and much, much more. It was a good conversation. Not one-on-one. It was in the middle of a media scrum, but it was still an interesting conversation. So we'll listen to that next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So following Eric Spoelstra's comments to media on Sunday afternoon, Dion Waiters was made available to the media for the first time all season long after, all regular season. He has not spoken to the media since preseason. He's been, again, in and out of the locker room, but rarely available, if at all. And he was his usual Dion self. He was gregarious. He was open. He was honest, I think, refreshingly so. But he also understood, I think, the magnitude of the situation. He also accepted responsibility for what's happened, much to a lot of people's chagrin who will be hearing this, because, you know, you want to look at Dion and say, why is he such a selfish jerk and doesn't accept his part? Why has he done everything that he can to jeopardize this season, get Dion off my team, et cetera, et cetera? But he comes across, in my opinion, as humbled, as honest, and as positive and looking forward to the rest of the season and what those opportunities might bring. I don't think he's expecting anything. And I'd say that he's accepting this challenge a little bit more. He looked like he was in good shape. He's lost some of the weight. I think he looks a little leaner even just from a couple days ago. Just getting that work and continuing to put in work, knowing that there is now a light at the end of the tunnel. And while I don't expect him to get consistent playing time, I do think he'll be continuing to be an option for Eric Spoelstra off the bench. So let's get into that interview now. It's in a media scrum, and there were a number of reporters there, but the questions were completely dominated from Tim Reynolds of the Associated Press. He got his questions in early. He had a clear line of questions that he wanted to direct towards Deion, so he did ask all the questions, and Deion, again, was open and explained himself pretty quickly. So I think the audio is a little off in the sense that it's in the middle at the end of a practice session, so you'll hear music in the background, some basketball dribbling, things of that sort as guys walk by. But I will say also that I asked Jimmy Butler what it was like to, for him and from his perspective, you know, what it's like for Deion to have to stay ready after not having played all season long. And Jimmy told me that he was extremely proud of his effort, that he believes everybody in the franchise is proud of what Deion's done in order to stay ready, and that he's very, very happy to see the way Deion responded. And I believe him, to be honest with you. And I think Goran felt the same way, even though he was not on the sidelines and not playing alongside Deion. I think he believes that Deion did a phenomenal job. And I think a lot of people around this team believe in Deion, support him. And while the coaching staff might not necessarily be just there just yet, I think that's starting to thaw out a little bit. And so hopefully this could be the peaceful end that I did not expect would happen this season. To be honest with you, I thought Deion was going to be cut, waived, or just continuously suspended and, you know, held on the bench as much as possible. Injuries may have forced Eric Spoelstra's hand a little bit, but I believe he has started to come around a little bit and can appreciate a little bit of what Deion does. I won't go so far as to say that there's good-natured bantering between the two, but things don't seem as chilly as they have over the course of the season. So anyway, here's Deion Waiters talking about what it was like to get that call from Eric Spoelstra on Friday, letting him know they would play, what he expects of himself over the course of the season, and what he thinks his role can be moving forward.
Get your eye a little bit. To go back to Friday, when Spo gave you the FaceTime,
yeah,
to let you know, you've been waiting, obviously. What was that? What was that like to hear that it was finally time?
I really didn't process it right away. I didn't really take it in. I don't know. I didn't tell nobody I was planning nothing. Like, I probably called my mom, that's it. So, and like told my girl, stuff like that. But I wasn't like that happy until it happened. Like, you get what I'm saying? So, going into it, like, I didn't know how long, anything like that. He asked me, was I ready? So I just grinned. I just said, yeah. And that's how I went, though.
How hopeful are you that tomorrow night, Tuesday night, going forward, you're still going to be on the card?
I mean, hopefully. Like I said, if I put myself in a position where I stay ready, where I ain't got to get ready, just being that, that pro, make sure I'm there for my teammates, I'll be fine. Whatever happens, of course I would like to play. But that's out of my control. At the end of the day, I know, like I said, with this team, I've already been successful. What I could bring to it also is just try to help, maintain that and bring a different element to the game, creating for myself and others. Like I said, guarding the best player, being able to just go out there, play basketball, have fun. Like I said, last game, that's what I miss the most. That excitement, hitting them big shots, things like that, just the crowd. I think that's what I miss the most, just that crowd erupting, just having them type of moments. That was like the best part for me.
You've been through some stuff. You've been through some stuff these last few months. How did you avoid going to... A lot of guys might have gone to a pretty dark place.
I didn't go there. At the end of the day, I'm not going to lie to you, man. My kids, my family... My support system is so strong, man. So, I had a lot of people. I got a lot of good people in my life. And you find that out when you go through them times. That's the first time I ever been through something like this in my life. And like I said, it's an experience, learning lesson at the end of the day. Like, I learned from it. You know, I don't feel like I lost anything or, you know, besides my money. Or, you know, at the end of the day. So, but it'll come back around. Like, I feel like that. But besides that, man, just going through that and being able to just to stay myself, stay sane, it taught me a lot about myself. I knew I was, like, tough, mentally tough because of, like, my upbringing. But that right there, it's going to try you. It's going to test you. But, you know, I didn't let it, like, cheat me from, you know, the most important stuff. And that's, you know, being a father every day, no matter what I'm going through. So I think, like, my kids just kept me sane, my family, my girl, things like that, man. And we got through it together. And, you know, that's the blessing, man. Like, I don't feel like I said, I don't feel like I took a loss. I feel like I learned from it, man, more than anything.
These things were largely self-inflicted, too. Was that hard to accept when you... Because I know you expect a lot from yourself. I mean, mistakes were made, obviously. Was that the toughest part to accept that you put yourself in this spot?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a grown man. But I don't point fingers. Like, I could easily say this and that or what trick, but you know, at the end of the day, it's me. I made certain decisions. So, you know, I take, you know, full responsibility. I'm a man at the end of the day. Like I said, I got a tough skin, man. It's not too many things going to break me. So, like I said, like, it was my fault. Moving past it, looking forward. That's all we can do, man.
The fact that you're on a team that's 31-14, that's a playoff team,
right,
that could be a really good team,
right,
once everything gets figured out.
Yeah.
What's that? I mean, it hasn't been that way around here in a minute.
I mean,
what's that like?
It's special. It's good. You know, got a lot of guys running that work hard. They don't even want to push you. Like I said, you know, they did a great job all year, just, you know, finding ways to win, playing together, sharing the ball, things like that, and it looked good. So anytime you got a team like that, you'd be itching to get out there, but at the same time, like, you know, it's going to take some time, take patience. It's a long season, so you never really, you know, have self-doubt. You know, like I said, a long season, guys might be in and out, and, you know, anything can happen. And you know, like, when you believe in yourself, you keep that confidence. Like, I'm always going to keep the confidence no matter what happens. And, that's what helped me, you know, last game. Just, I knew what I can do. I thought I was going to be tired than what I was, but I've been, you know, busting my ass every day. So it actually wasn't that bad, just a couple of bursts, but I was fine, man, you know.
Spo said you've still got some game conditioning work to do, and he said that would be expected, too. Where would you sort of put yourself physically right now?
I don't know, because if I put a high number, y'all gonna say, "Oh, Deion, rest in confidence." So I don't know. I gotta let that, you know, figure itself out. But as long as I continue, you know, put the work in, it's gonna come with, you know, playing time also. So, it go both ways.
All right, guys, thank you.
So there you have it. I thought it would be good to include the whole interview so you can get a full sense of what it's like, not just from a media perspective, but answering the kind of questions and asking those questions and getting the answers delivered to us. I think you start to get a sense of what it's like for Deion and what he's trying to do. I will say that whether it's 100% sincere or not, I can't tell you for certain. But I know that he is absolutely making an effort to try and show the team that he is a team player. And that's difficult to do. That's a lot more difficult than you'd think, you know. When your individual performance means so much to you and to your career and things of that sort, and you're denied an opportunity to prove yourself as an individual because, you know, you're not getting any playing time and things of that sort, I think it's somewhat natural for you to respond a little negatively. But Deion seems to have gone past that. He accepted blame, which is, I think, a huge step for Eric Spoelstra. And he seems like he is ready to turn the page a little bit. So I thought that was a pretty impressive and a good talk, a good interview. And I think it really showed a sign of Deion that we have not seen this season for a number of reasons. Obviously, not being available to the media being one of them. But I think it was a good positive sense. And if I got the idea, if I had to pick a side, whether or not Deion wants to be here, I think he does. I think he wants to make this work. I think he wants to stick it out and contribute to a winning team because, I mean, not since his days in Oklahoma City has he really had that opportunity. He wasn't much of a factor when the Heat made the playoffs and a couple seasons ago. And he obviously, during the 41-41 stretch before he was awarded his contract, he didn't really get that chance much either. So, well, they didn't have any kind of playoff success that year because they didn't make the playoffs. So Either way, it was good to kind of see that, kind of see the support from his teammates, and we'll see what happens when the Heat take on the Orlando Magic on Monday. I'll have a recap for you after that game, but that's it for today. Thank you for connecting with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or by emailing me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil, signing off, and thank you, as always, for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.